Welcome to Pet Food Advisors. I'm Tracy Hotchner, here with my co-host, Dr. Sean Delaney, a board-certified veterinary nutritionist in California whose company, Balance It, is sought after by pet owners and veterinarians around the world for advice about personalized, optimal nutrition. This show offers well-researched, objective information about pet nutrition, from home cooking to the pet food industry, so you can make thoughtful decisions about feeding your own dogs and cats. This show is a production of Eight Paws LLC and DVM Consulting, Inc., which are solely responsible for its content. Support for this show comes from Nordic Naturals, omega-3 fish oil products for people and their pets, providing the same premium quality omega-3 fish oils in all their products. Research shows that even the best diets are deficient in the essential fatty acids found in omega-3 oils. Nordic Naturals uses responsibly sourced, healthy wild fish and uses third-party testing to guarantee purity and freshness in their oils, while also offering vegetarian versions of the all-important omega-3 fatty acids. Put Pet Radio 13 in the code box for 15% off and free shipping every time you shop. Here I am, pet food advisor, Dr. Sean Delaney, pet food advisor to the stars, but also to luminaries in the religious world. This is something you may not have known, Dr. Sean, but you have a very high profile with an important retired rabbi on the East Coast. May I tell you a Balance It story?
I would love to hear.
Okay, you're going to love this. And I think people will get a kick out of this because those of us who spend so much of our time, one might say too much of our time, thinking and worrying about pet food and what's in it and what's good for the dogs and what isn't good for the dogs and how they do well or how they do poorly and are we being told the truth? I reluctantly went to a dinner party. I say reluctantly only because I don't like to go to any dinner parties. And this was the 50th wedding anniversary of people who were very dear to me. So I went down to New York from Vermont, where I live, which is like a trek into the wilderness, a reverse wilderness.
I'm glad you said down, because sometimes my East Coast geography as a Californian is never clear.
Right. It always is across. Yes, it's down. It's from north to south. It's sort of, I think of Vermont as being like Italy in the sense that it's long and narrow and it sort of goes from up to down. My sense of geography is pathetic, but I know that if a stone rolls south from here, it goes sort of through Massachusetts or Connecticut and it winds up in New York City. Of course, New York State is off to the right, so never mind. That would be across. So I'm at this dinner party, and they're renewing their vows. They got married fairly young, and here they are, really happily married, wonderful couple. And the rabbi that someone whispers to me, oh, that's the rabbi of the temple they used to be, that they actually helped to build in Armonk, New York. And he was the rabbi all those years. He looks like a pretty young man himself. He didn't marry them originally. And he's re-blessing them, and I know nothing about religion, so there's a bunch of stuff in Hebrew, and what do I know? And it's all mysterious, but they're happy. And I'm seated. There's only 50 people at this party, and I'm seated between the rabbi and his wife, and I'm thinking, oh, my God, what am I going to talk about? I know nothing about Palestinian politics and sort of nothing about religion, and oh, my goodness. Well, this is going to be a long evening. And somehow she pulls out her cell phone to turn it off, and there's a picture of what? Not a child or a grandchild. A dog, of course, a yellow lab on her cell phone, a grown woman. So we get to chatting about that. It turns out this dog, Russell, is the light of their lives. And the rabbi leans across and somehow discovers that I've written a Bible, which it didn't occur to me is also a Bible, which is rather sacrilegious to a rabbi, I suppose. And his eyes light up and he says, so do you know anything about dog food? I said, well, not as much as some people, but something. And we get to talking and he was beside himself. I mean, if we were talking about the liberation, the Six-Day War, Palestinian, whatever, he could not have been more animated. Oh, my God, for 10 years, I've been trying to find someone. I can't find a vet. I can't find anyone who will let me feed my dog real food. It just doesn't seem right to only feed this kibble. I don't know what's in it. I don't understand why I can't feed real food, and it's what I've always wanted to do. And our temple, when I ran it, had a CSA, and we only bought food from farmers we knew, and we really wanted to have a connection with the food and the land, and it's part of the biblical tradition, and I can't do it for my dog. So what do I tell him? Yes, you may. And to Balance It, go to Balance It. So he went to your website. I just interviewed him on Dog Talk, my NPR show. He went to your website, and his eyes lit up because there is this amazing software, which I told him is sort of like the Imitation Game movie. You know, it seems like, well, there's only about 50 things on there, but it's like 55 million combinations. and that you figured it all out, and it's free to the public, and you buy some Balance It supplement, and you give the right amount according to your size, breed, age, and there you go. He says every meal that he makes is a joy for him. A joy.
Oh,
an absolute joy. And I'm telling you, he said it was like a revelation to him in a true deep sense. He had waited 10 years to be given permission, to be given advice, to be given guidance in how to do something that he just wanted to do. He felt it was right that we know what we're eating for all of the people that we love. And all of the two,
that's
the four
really
leggings.
Nice. Well,
so
thanks,
isn't that cool?
Thanks for sharing the story, but in the wedding renewal vows, sharing the site. That's always nice. We've survived long and hard on word of mouth, and I'm glad it was useful to him and provided him some freedom, if you will.
Yeah, and I said to him, you know, you were famous and well known amongst vets, but it is more recently that individual dog owners can have the freedom and the revolutionary revelation of discovering that. He said he had just made short ribs and apricots and sweet potatoes and string beans. And he just loved making the dog's dinner. I was like, wow, I'll be over to eat soon. That sounds great.
It does sound great. Well, you know, it's interesting. I always find it fascinating what people's combinations that they come up with.
And, yes.
And I, surprisingly, a pet food company probably hasn't come up with that unique combination. But, you know, it's interesting. I think that when you talk about rabbis are, you know, really involved with food at times. And a past experience of mine comes to mind where my father is retired now, but was a commercial banker. And so he would give loans to different companies. And one of those companies was in the California, Southern California area. And they make kosher ice cream, which is relatively unique. And
wow.
I happened to be going to, you know, dinner or lunch, excuse me, with him. And we were going to go. And he said, hey, I want to stop by this guy and check in on something. I said, sure. And so we walk in and he introduced me and he goes, hey, you want a tour of the plant? I said, sure. And so he's walking me through and we're walking through their, you know, one of their areas. And he introduces me, he goes, oh, by the way, this is Rabbi so-and-so. And I said, hello. And we walked on. And later on, he explained to me that, you know, the rabbi actually had to be physically on site while they were producing the kosher ice cream. And
I had no idea.
That.
I thought they had to bless something, or in the case of animals, make sure that they were killed appropriately to the Bible, which is to bleed
right,
them
and
out
I think
or
that,
something.
I think that's true. And I think that's true. Like with halal and in the Muslim faith and stuff. But what I didn't realize too is that apparently there are many rabbis that make a living, and there's like an association of rabbis that make sure that food is actually being produced kosher. And so when you see, you know, that little, you know, logo, and there's a variety of them, that actually has specific
I'll be darned.
And you can't just have that, and you have to have had someone, you know, truly be involved with it. And it's kind of like I think about with all the different rules we have with labeling and and with, you know, maybe organic or making sure that you're meeting the state's laws. And it's interesting how you have to be very careful. So I do think that, you know, it's interesting to hear about the rabbi and saying there's a long biblical tradition. It continues to this day, I guess.
It's really interesting. And I'll tell you something else that strikes me as pretty funny. Speaking of Vermont, here I am in this funny little state. And there are kosher dog biscuits made just 30 minutes from me by these two really nice guys who are not observant Jews. I mean, they don't keep kosher households that I know of. But they make this biscuit called Wagatha's, which is a much beloved dog biscuit. It's only all they make is this dog biscuit in various flavors, delightful ingredients, you know, whether it's rosemary or cherries or what have you, chickpeas. And they're kosher. And I was like, is this a gimmick? Why does a dog biscuit need to be kosher? Well, they said in a kosher household, everything that comes in the house must be kosher. Of course, the odd thing about really observant Jews is, to my understanding, but write to me at radiopetlady@gmail.com if this is not the case, observant Jews consider pets to be dirty. And they don't allow pets to be in their homes. Now, maybe that has loosened with time, but that certainly was at one time true, that truly Orthodox Jews would not keep pets.
Very interesting. You know, I've heard that with the Muslim faith, that there's, you know, depending on who's interpreting what passage of the Quran, that they can have concerns about the cleanliness of
I'll be darned.
You know, pet and stuff. But there are other, you know, quotations that talk about that, you know, kind of the righteous man takes care of his animals kind of quote. And so it's interesting to see that. have experienced where folks keep kosher, where it can be very much a concern because they are worried about, you know, is there something hidden in there that could be a concern, especially pork-based products. And I had, you know, one time this come up because there was kibble that's for kidney disease that's produced by one of the, by Purina specifically, that uses a pork-based ingredient. And you wouldn't initially notice that. And they said, hey, we can't use this. I think it was pork fat, if memory serves correctly, because we keep kosher. And I didn't realize to what degree that they'll actually have often, for example, two dishwashers. I was aware
two refrigerators. I knew somebody in New York growing up that had two refrigerators, so they must have had two dishwashers and two sets of plates.
Right, exactly. And so it can be really an important consideration and why, you know, truth in labeling, if you will, can be really important for people in a lot of ways that we didn't, you know, anticipate or think about, just like the food allergic, you know, human with worries of peanuts and has it been in a facility that's been processed. And so, you know, label accuracy and having that really becomes an important factor beyond what we often talk about for, you know, pets.
Well, it's been a big hoo-ha in the pet world. There was a pretty big scandal on the topic of byproduct.
Is that a French word?
It is. I'm just trying to make it sound more French, you know. But there, it really was quite scandalous that the smaller company, although I don't know how much smaller it is, it seems to be getting bigger and bigger, Blue Buffalo, was making claims, and you can describe it better than I can, but making claims in wildly, I want to add this, this is my comment, wildly expensive TV ads. Anyone can afford wildly expensive TV ads is not a little company. It isn't David and Goliath.
You know, I just saw Pet Food Industry Magazine. Actually, I think I have it. I didn't anticipate this. It's the top global pet food companies, and I think Blue Buffalo is listed there, and I would not consider them small anymore.
That's right.
I think if I look at there, I think they quoted as, you know, somewhere in this neighborhood of $800 million a year in sales.
Whoa.
So when you're approaching $1 billion, I don't think
you're not exactly tiny mom and pop operation.
Yeah, and the FDA to that point has some rules about what is small, and you know the cutoffs are being debated.
Oh, really? The FDA considers the size of your company in their what? Their rules?
In upcoming rules, they are.
No kidding.
There's pending. It's related to the Food Modernization Act specifically, and how quickly you have to adopt their rules.
Related
specifically to your annualized sales. And there was a cutoff, I think, around $5 million, and then $2.5 million, and then they had a discussion about less than $1 million, so that you know it. How quickly you'd have to adopt these things because it's a huge burden. And part of
this,
based on feedback of what is this going to cost to implement. And it's not so much that, you know, they're saying, oh, well, if you're a small producer, you can be doing unsafe things.
Right.
It was more about the fact that there's a lot of documentation that is physically just laborious. It's and you are supposed to already be doing it, but how quickly you have to fully document it was what's being debated. So I did pull this up. And so this is the, let's see, Pet Food Industry from January 2015 edition. And it has the Table 1 Top 35 Global Pet Food Companies 2013, page 25. And let's see, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. Seventh biggest company listed is Blue Buffalo. It's
well,
750.
That's a hell of a lot of money. And my understanding was that they were bought by somebody or maybe some big you know, hedge fund investors put a ton of dough into it. But before we talk about what this lawsuit was about and then the counter lawsuit, well, it's actually a lawsuit against them for making claims about labeling. And then it turned out the very thing that they were calling the kettle black about, the pot was black too. But that they one talks about the big four, the big four pet food companies, which are the gorillas in the room, if you will. They kind of, they have the muscle and the might. What are those four? Is one of them Purina, or is Nestle Purina one company?
You know what's interesting is, I didn't really think about this. I always thought of the big four as being like Mars, Nestle Purina, being that Nestle bought Purina.
Right.
Procter & Gamble or Iams or Eukanuba as we think about it, and Hill's. But what's fascinating about this is that you have to recognize there's been some recent consolidation in the you know, market. And, you know, Procter & Gamble Pet Care no longer exists, and that was a $3.1 billion company. It's been bought, well, it exists, but it's been bought by Mars. And Mars, is it now, is it $17 billion? So you add that in, they're at $20 billion. They're almost double the next competitor, which is Nestle Purina at $11 billion.
Wow.
And then there's Hill's, which in comparison, when you now have those two together,
mega giants,
at 20 and at $12 billion, Hills is only 2.2 billion. So they're tiny in comparison, really.
Wow.
I mean, I know it's hard to say 2.2 billion
right.
is tiny, but when your competitor is almost 10 times bigger, you know, at the level of the Mars family.
So is this sort of like the fish in the sea where the bigger fish eats the next smaller fish, eats the next smaller fish? It seems that these bigger companies, I say gobbling up, and that may sound pejorative, but they are buying up, eating up, removing the competition, either that's similar to what they make or dissimilar to what they make, more holistic, more natural, more something. They're buying them up. They're,
well, I mean,
they're
you look
consuming
at Natura,
them.
Where, well, you look at Natura, which was bought by Procter & Gamble, and you know, as you know, I spent years there, then was acquired by Mars. So, you know, Natura, which was a small, initially
family-started
company,
yep.
grew to a size that then was acquired by Procter & Gamble, which is obviously a huge company overall, you know, not in the pet world anymore at all. But even when it was, I mean, I think they're, you know, $100 billion plus sales with all their brands. But, you know, then that portion got acquired by Mars and, you know, it's consolidated. So and Mars has certainly been leading the pack. They purchased Royal Canin, which was a French company started by
a pioneer. Oh, my, that's right.
They purchased Nutro, which was a separate company for many years. They purchased Greenies. They purchased Doane, which a lot of people probably saw outside.
I don't know that. What is Doane?
But Doane was the major.
Oh, D-O-A-N.
Yeah, E,
right.
I believe.
Oh, E.
Well, I think there's an E. Now I can't remember. You may be right. There wasn't. But regardless, they were the single largest co-manufacturer, private labeler, and they purchased them. And, you know, so there has been just acquisition after acquisition.
Wow.
And I can't even remember who I'm trying to remember who bought Menu Foods recently. I should know that off the top of my head, but Menu Foods, which was obviously implicated in the large pet food recall in 2007.
And made foods for many different brands. So that many different well-known
right,
brands
right.
were being made in their plants
right.
one at
and
a
even
time.
And even these larger brands, you know, still utilize co-manufacturing. So it's not just the smaller brands that utilize it. You know, it's smaller brands or bigger brands that use it for maybe a product they don't have the specialized equipment in, or they have a specific, you know, interest or desire in making a food. And so it's really interesting to see the consolidation. And you know, I don't know if that will that trend will continue, but it certainly seems that the gorillas, if you will, are Mars and Nestle Purina. And
is Mars still at one point was a privately owned company?
It still is.
No, oh,
Mars
my
is.
God.
Yeah, so Mars is owned by the Mars family. And
whoa.
They, you know, I have been at meetings. So there's every 2 to 3 years, there's what's called the Waltham International Nutritional Science Symposium, something like that. It just rolls off the tongue.
Right.
It used to be called the Waltham Symposium. And I actually, when I was at UC Davis, we put together one of the Waltham Symposium that actually was held in Washington, D.C., with Cornell University. And so I was on the coordinating committee, and it was supported by Waltham. And Waltham is the research arm, nutrition research arm for Mars Pet Care. And they host and have people. It's an international meeting. I've gone to, and I think I may have mentioned this in the past, I've gone to Cambridge in the UK.
Netherlands, right.
I've been all over the world at this particular meeting. I've been not so far afield for me in Portland and Vancouver. But it goes around, and they put this on. And at two of these, including in D.C. and then most recently the one in Portland, one of the Mars family members actually is present and talks about their history of four or so generations of passion for pets and how they got into the pet food market, and how a lot of people don't realize it. They think of maybe Uncle Ben's, which is a Mars brand. They may think of all the candy
Wrigley. Mars Wrigley. Did those two companies also merge? Or was it always Mars Wrigley?
I don't know that. I don't know that part of it. But what's amazing to me is that in that conversation most recently, one of the female Mars family members said, you know, pet nutrition is actually the largest portion of our business. And she cited, if our memory serves, globally, a much larger number than even this $20 billion.
Jeepers.
So it's very much a part of what they do and their family is involved in. And, you know, it's interesting. My impression is that, you know, they really are unique in the sense that many families, I think, that have immense wealth don't stay actively involved in the business. And they're now, what, four generations in, and it sounds like they very much so. And to that point, when the first time I saw a Mars family member, he was the first person I ever saw with one of those computer screens you can't see from the side. He had a laptop, and it was all...
Interesting. I don't even know about that. So no one can peek at what you're doing?
It's like a film. Yeah, it's like a film.
Oh, how cool.
You can only see it from directly in front. And apparently, because they're just, this is the culture that they've been raised in for their whole family.
Right.
That when they're at a restaurant, if they're talking business and someone becomes within earshot, mid-sentence, they stop talking.
Is that a fact?
Just because of the need to, you know, industrial espionage.
Wow.
And keep secrets. And not that they're talking to anything that's
secret,
just that someone might, you know.
Isn't that amazing? So they've been raised over the generations to realize that it's a highly competitive field and that they're so powerful and potent that whatever they're going to do next would be of great interest to others.
Yeah,
I mean, if it was just the acquisition of another company.
That's right. And, you know, and they're not, and it's not like they have, you know, sometimes with a publicly traded company, you have to be very careful. So, you know, maybe they have business dealings with a publicly traded company and they could be held liable if there was an issue that they revealed.
Right.
On their, and so there really is, I think, it's an interesting dynamic and in the pet food world. I don't think people think about it, but if you want a family-owned business and buy pet food from it, it happens to be the Mars family. They just happen to also be the largest pet food company.
Well, I'd rather buy from you, because Balance It is a family-owned and bred and created and run company, and you have your own very, very specialized dry foods now, in addition to the supplements which you have made for
some... And I have good news with regard to that.
Oh, what is it? Tell.
I literally just found out. After 10 years, 10 years of work, we are going to have a patent issued in the United States for our supplement.
It took 10 years?
Yes. And because of that, I didn't realize it. Well, I realized this in the process, but because the patent office has been so backed up, if they've caused delays, they calculated something like, let me see, I think over 1,000 days. What was the number that they actually cited? They calculated that their delays... it was just under 2,000, was 1,915 days of delay on their end. And so the patent was extended where it normally, because of when we applied, it would be expire in 2026. The patent won't expire till 2031.
How funny. They take it very seriously. Well, congratulations.
Yeah, it's a huge step. But congratulations is really a reflection of a persistence and a willingness to pay a lot of application and renewal fees and lawyer fees. And that's really... reflection of. I mean, I think it was clear, at least to me, that it was a novel patent and novel invention. Obviously, you have to prove that to the patent office, and they are. I don't know that my experience is unique in this regard. They are thorough.
No
kidding. And I was really impressed, frankly, with their thoroughness and their desire to truly make sure that there wasn't prior art, that there was something that was truly non-obvious is the term they use, to the point where we had to go through and multiple times make spreadsheets to verify a point that they raised, and it was
I mean, there's a peer review aspect to it. In other words, people of great intelligence or knowledge must be looking at it, not just numbers crunching kind of people.
And depending on your patent, my understanding, and it was certainly apparent to me, they have patent examiners that have subject expertise. So they definitely have a science background and a knowledge about what you're talking about, so that they can, you know, obviously review it with a great deal of knowledge and background. And it's really
It's really quite an extraordinary accomplishment. I had no idea. In a nutshell, I know you hate when I promote Balance It, but I can't imagine not promoting something that is unique and, by the way, now patented. Patented in your neighborhood
and patented in the United States and in Canada. Our Canadian
very country. Cool. What is it in a nutshell that makes your supplement so unique that I'm sure other people have tried to come up with a supplement that could be added, I guess, to kind of generalized homemade pet food and make it a complete food. In a word.
What ultimately, I guess the best way to put it is that initially when I first started formulating diets, and remember, you know, maybe your rabbi story as an example of this, it wasn't that common.
Not at all.
And so I started my residency going on a decade and a half ago. We won't date ourselves, but we'll...
A long time ago, but it was heretical. What you were doing was heresy, because it was simultaneous at the time that people were being told never feed real food, actual food, people food, and only feed bagged food.
And it came about because we'd have really sick, this is a tertiary or a quaternary, it's even hard to say that, referral level, where you had animals that just had so many diseases that did have a nutritional management strategy, there just wasn't a commercially prepared food.
Yeah.
And so that's what we got our start from. And it was only that, you know, these animals would be so sick without the appropriate diet that people would be willing to put the time and effort and the expense, and the veterinarian would suggest it. And so we spent a great deal of time, you know, basically going and making diets, and we would use a combination of human supplements. And frankly, when I went down the path of trying to make the supplement, I wasn't sure that you could make an all-in-one supplement, because once you put things in a specific proportion to each other, you can't extract or diminish the level of that nutrient in proportion to others. So for example, you know, you have a diet, and my best example of this, and I actually use this with the patent office when they were having some questions about it, is that let's say you're feeding a diet exclusively as vegetarian to a dog, a tofu-based diet. There's no vitamin D in that diet. Whereas if you feed a diet, for example, that is all salmon or very rich in salmon or salmon oil, salmon is very rich in vitamin D, so rich that it actually gets close potentially to the toxic dose.
Whoa.
And so here you have a range where within normal foodstuffs that would be fed to a dog, that it could be zero and is in none to almost the toxic level.
Yes.
How do you make a supplement that bridges those two potential scenarios? And it wasn't obvious that you could do it. And that's why we created the software that we now, most folks that formulate diets now use, to be able to go through hundreds of thousands, literally, of scenarios to optimize and figure out where you could push things to get something that would work, not necessarily all the time, but most of the time. And I still remember, and I don't know if I brought this up, but it's worth kind of just talking about where we've gone technologically. I remember that we had to do these runs, and we automated the runs, and we would basically plug in and we would make a diet, and then we would look at the deficiencies, and then we would go on and incrementally increase how much of the particular protein source or the carb source, and then we would go through different carb sources and protein sources, and then we would compile all this. Well, to do one of the single runs through the, you know, 100,000 or so different diets that we were looking at the time, about 2003, 2004, it took my computer, like, it would take my computer like 2 weeks. Well, I would need to
No.
do
No. This yes. is like that movie, The Imitation Game, with the early computers.
Yes.
Weeks.
So my big investment, when we started the company, I still remember writing the check to Dell, and I just recently just got rid of the shells of these, was to buy two of the very first Xeon processor servers so that I could bring that time down to 24 hours. We could do it overnight, running 24 hours a day, and I could do a single run, and I would do it on two simultaneously. So I could actually do it with the equivalent of every 12 hours, because I had two running back to back for weeks on end to then optimize it. And so that's what makes it unique, is that it's not obvious. If you were to hand me and say, how do you make a supplement, I would not have come up with the formulation.
Right.
I would have said, well, this, I wouldn't put this here. I would put a little bit higher. I'd put a little bit lower. But when you run through all those scenarios of the potential, you know, guy that's going to feed spare ribs,
right,
cots and everything else, you can find a solution that does provide most of the time something that would work. And that's kind of why, obviously, eventually the patent office came about and said, yep, this is a
wow
invention, and you deserve a patent and protection against intellectual property that is involved.
And God knows how many more lawyers will be needed when people start to try and encroach on it. Oh, well, we'll worry about that down the road. But in other words, you're saying that the Balanced supplement that you sell on the website, along with the free advice and information you give about how to formulate a homemade diet, that supplement is given regardless of what the pet is eating and only based on the size of the dog?
No, that's what's unique about it, too, is that the reason we have software and we make it available for free is that, unlike most drugs, and I'll call it a drug for the moment.
Okay.
Because I think it'll have a help. Like most drugs that people think about, you dose it on a body weight basis.
That's right.
Because
that's
there's
right.
Not, the drug is not present typically. Now, you could say, well, maybe if it was steroid, it's already right. somewhat A. But for the most part, you aren't making in your body penicillin.
Right.
You know, and so because of that, you just are going to assume there's none, and you know, okay, based on this body weight, I give this amount. And, you know, in human medicine, people are used to be, and maybe not as much, but they're pretty, you know, similar in size. So that they actually don't even scale things often on body weight. They just say per human.
That's right. That's right.
And obviously, maybe for children, you do a little bit different dosing because there's body size differences in age. Whereas in veterinary medicine, we have a 100-fold difference in dogs. If you think about it,
that's true.
I regularly see a 200 pound dog, and you can see a 2-pound dog.
That's right.
A 100-fold difference. And so you have to scale things on body weight. Well, that's important for sure. But what you're feeding is as equally important, as I said, for the example, the tofu or the salmon. And
right.
So the software actually will go about and determine and make sure that you're not going to give an excess or have any deficiencies, because it doesn't always work. And now, most of the time it works, but sometimes it's impossible and it would be inappropriate to use it because you might give too much. Because what will happen, you just say, hey, I weaned a whole bunch of, let's say, vitamin B12 for this particular diet, but in doing so, I give too much calcium because it's coming along with the vitamin
right.
B12. And so it's the software is crucial because the dose is dependent not solely based on body weight, but also based on what's being fed.
So therefore, when you make Balance It for a customer, whether it's directly to a pet owner or to a vet for a pet owner, it is custom made?
It is, every single time.
Wow. So that's a pretty amazing thing to hear. That is not something I fully understood. I mean, the customization, the individualization is the thing that's lacking in so many things in our lives, both philosophically and just in a practical sense. But in terms of a diet, it allows you to have a large swing in what you're going to feed, but have the Balance It supplement that keeps everything at an optimal level for things that may be lacking or may
right.
And that's
what makes it so challenging, and what it took 10 years for me to finally perfect what we use in Auto Balancer Easy, because another way of tackling this was to be just to make some generic recipes that you scale up and or down.
Right, right.
The software is not actually doing that. It's actually in real time making a brand new novel recipe. There's nothing that's in the background being saved in the database.
Right, right.
When the programmers were going through this exercise, they said, well, maybe we could render it or provide it to the user faster. And I said, and this is now 2014, so we've gone down 10 years of computer processing speed that's faster. And I said, well, there's about 10 billion variations that someone can make on this. If we just have it run around the clock, I did the calculation, because 10 billion is so big, our minds have a hard time wrapping around it. With the best server we could get, if we only had one server at this time, now 10 years faster, you know, it would take about 1,000 years to
and
put together 10 billion recipes. It's just physically impossible to put all those together and then have them sitting in a database to extract them. You really have to do it in real time to be able to do what it's doing.
Have you seen the movie The Imitation Game?
I have not.
Oh, my God. What you're talking about is his was cracking the German code. Yours is cracking the code for what to feed a pet and how to balance it. But what you went through is just what is depicted, this giant so-called server computer that he creates.
I think that's about Turing, right? Is that?
Yes, absolutely.
I don't think I can compare myself to Alan Turing.
No, you can't, but you cannot, but you can. He was the one that even gave you the idea there could be a processor or a server, or that there was a way to do it. But it still is a similar challenge. You'd love the movie. Anyone listening will love the movie because you realize that people...
I think that's Benedict Cumberbatch.
Cumberbatch or something, yes. Well, the thing is that people really have to understand that someone who creates something out of thin air, an idea whose time has come but has never existed before, which is really what you did, and in a different way what he did, that's really worthy of note and worthy of support, and in this case, worthy of a patent. We've run out of time, but we never did get to the lawsuit. So on the next show, if you have heard about the Purina Blue Buffalo lawsuit and are curious, what was that all about and did it really matter in the end of the day? And I'm wondering that myself, except for, of course, a bunch of lawyers got rich again. tune in next time, and we will give you the rest of the story on that and maybe a few other tidbits to go with it. Thank you so much, Dr. Sean. Great to talk to you.
Good talking to you, Tracy.
Thanks for listening. The Radio Pet Lady Network is brought to you in part by Spot Platinum, an allergy test for which elements in your dog's environment or diet may be causing his scratching or licking. He may have allergies that Spot Platinum can determine and for which they can make a USDA-approved serum custom-tailored to your dog's specific needs to control his symptoms. Spot Platinum is a privately owned company that has done more than 500,000 allergy tests over 25 years. For more information, visit them on the web at vetallergy.com. Support for the show also comes from VaxaCheck, a simple test done right in your vet's office to discover whether your dog or puppy is protected from the deadly core diseases or needs revaccination. Shelters can use VaxaCheck on new arrivals to separate healthy dogs from unprotected ones and avoid unnecessarily over-vaccinating dogs. VaxaCheck, for your dog's safety and your peace of mind. And VaxaCheck for cats is coming soon.